Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Que quiere marcharse de Semedo. Semedo de momento está enchufado. Ahora justo lo digo y justo se pierde. Ay, a punto ha estado de cometer penalti. Gol de Nicolás Pepe.
Is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. James, good morning to you. That hurt my ears, but I think it might put us in the right kind of mood for this particular podcast.
Yeah, that's the best I could muster. I was thinking, is it a good morning? It's not quite a bad morning. Yeah. It's just sort of like pure frustration on my part.
I'm feeling a weirdly, strangely kind of furious, but somewhat positive at the same time, and also angry. But, you know, at the same time, I can see silver linings, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot to get through, I think, because it really was an eventful game in many ways. It was a bizarre game, you know, considering I can't remember the last time we ended up with nine men. When is the last time we ended up with nine men? Ten men? We've done it lots. But nine? Was it? I remember a game against Tottenham. Didn't we end up with nine men against Tottenham when I think Freddie Ljungberg and could have been Martin Keown got sent off? And I think
possibly
Freddie Ljungberg kicked in a door at White Hart Lane. But that's some years ago.
That's fair enough. Yeah, I'm trying to think. Was there an occasion at Anfield? I think that was 10 men. I can't remember too many nines. You don't see it often.
You certainly don't.
Although we did see a nine at Old Trafford. Bloody hell. What a weird night of football it was, all in all.
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking about red cards, the one the Southampton guy picked up after, 90 seconds on his first start for the... I mean, what the fuck? I mean, he must really not like Scott McTominay. So, anyway.
It was incredible.
Let's not waste any time talking about Southampton or other red cards, because we've got loads to get into.
Yeah,
I don't know how you feel about this, but I think I would prefer to deal with the stuff that went badly first, and then touch on what was good about last night from an Arsenal perspective.
That's absolutely the right way around.
Yeah, we're kind of a little pushed for time this morning, so we've got like an hour to get through this and the questions and everything else. So I feel like we need to finish part one on the upbeat part of things, and we can deal with the other stuff. We're 1-0 up. We have a goal kick. We think halftime is coming, and everybody is basically readying their, well, that was a really good half from Arsenal tweets at halftime.
Yeah, I tweeted mine by mistake. I just pressed, I had it in drafts, really good half from Arsenal, maybe should be further up.
Yeah.
And I accidentally tweeted it. And then within 3 seconds, a penalty had been awarded. And I just deleted it immediately. It was like, that was a terrible grave error. Everyone's going to blame me.
Yeah, it wasn't really your fault, in fairness. But yeah, look, I can see why you deleted it. Look, it was a positive half in general, but it ended in a really disappointing and frustrating way. So where do we begin this particular discussion? You know, there's layers to this because... I don't think it's a foul. I don't think it's a penalty. And I don't think it's a red card. I know some people will differ with that. But that's just what I think. I think it's absurd to lose a man for that. I think it's ridiculously harsh to give a penalty for that. You know, if Luiz had tapped his ankles, but by all means. But this was just accidental, purely accidental. And I know David Luiz has got form and he's got history and everything else, which I think played a part in the referee's decision, because he just saw a big woolly head and something that looked clumsy and just went, oh, well, of course. And I, you know, the frustration of that is exacerbated by the fact that VAR looked at it and, you know, upheld the referee's decision. So, yeah, on the very the nuts and bolts of that incident, the contact, however you want to look at it, where do you stand?
I mean, first of all, can I just say, I hate doing this. I hate talking about referees and blaming decisions.
Sure, sure.
I find it so infuriating and boring. But today, and this is not the views of, I should point out, The Athletic or children's television, I think all referees are fucking nerds and should get in the bin. I'm sick of them.
Yeah.
I am really sick of them today. That can't be a red card.
No.
It can't be a red card. I mean, the thing that really... The absurdity of, if he had made a challenge, he'd be booked.
Yeah.
But because the guy's heel happens to hit him as he's running near him, it's a sending off.
Yeah, it's nonsense, isn't it? It's absolutely nonsense. You know, he couldn't have made a genuine challenge for the ball there anyway. I mean, that's the reality of where only, it was. It's too far behind, you know.
It would be a professional foul.
Yeah.
That would be, arguably, in my opinion, more egregious an act. That's more likely to be a sending off, or should be more likely to be a sending off. There are lots of reasons to be frustrated with Luiz, and I know he gets himself sent off far too regularly, but I genuinely think here he's just kind of trying to stay out the way. Like, the guy's gone.
Yeah.
He's keeping pace because, obviously, if the ball rebounds, he can't just stand 30 yards from his goal. He's got to follow the ball to an extent. But he makes no attempt to bring the guy down.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen people talk about this idea that, you know, he's an experienced player and, you know, he knows that, like, running across the back of an opponent, you know, it might look accidental. I don't even think that's what's going on in this case. I genuinely don't. I mean, we can all see David Luiz is not fucking subtle. He's not a subtle player.
Yeah.
The fouls he makes are not sly. They're not like difficult for the referee to spot. You know what I mean? When he makes a foul, it's really fucking obvious because they're usually so stupid. And look, I'm saying this as somebody, you know, people who listen to the podcast regularly, who read the blog, will know that I am not here in any way to excuse stupidity or rashness mm-hmm. or carelessness or whatever it might be on the part of David Luiz. I'm just not here for that. On the last podcast, we were asked a question very specifically about, you know, should we renew him in the summer? And I said, no, we absolutely should not. I'm not here for any more of David Luiz. But I feel in this particular circumstance, this was extremely harsh. Where I have some maybe criticism of Luiz is that he's an experienced player. He's 33, nearly 34 years of age. He's played 7,000 games in his life for Brazil and for all the teams that he's played for. And where he makes the mistake, in my view, is challenging for that ball when it's headed back from the goal kick. We think the halftime whistle is going to go. You know, he has been accused sometimes of sitting too deep, which is mm-hmm. fair. Mm-hmm. I get it. When you're in the middle of a game, you might want your defender to push up. In that situation, if he's just sitting off, the guy has to run at him and, you know, he can make a foul if he wants to and take a yellow card if he needs to in that situation. So that, you know, I can see why there's criticism over that. But in terms of the incident that saw him sent off, it's just absurd. It is ridiculous. It's not a foul. It's not a red card. It shouldn't be a penalty. Even if you think it's a penalty, you know, to compound that by reducing a team to 10 men for an entire half, it's just not, I don't want to say it's not fair, but I mean, it's just fucking infuriatingly bad decision making from the officials. It isn't fair because it's not the kind of offence that should merit a red card.
It's too harsh a punishment,
basically.
A penalty and a sending off is too harsh a punishment. They changed the laws to kind of bring in this idea of double jeopardy. And you couldn't, you know, you can't get sent off in that situation if you attempt to make a challenge now. This is effectively a loophole that exists because You know, this law was brought in to prevent people making very cynical challenges when the ball's no near them. And in this instance, it's been applied in such a way to send off a player who
didn't make a
really
challenge.
Yeah. It's just trying to stay out of trouble. I mean, I agree. You can look at the incident and question the defending from Arsenal more generally. I think it's far too easy for Wolves to get in behind.
Yeah.
The line is ragged. I think there's a bit of a confusion between Luiz and Partey about who's taking who, and you know that's not the first time Arsenal have struggled with a long ball into sort of the centre circle area this season. It's a bit of a recurring theme, but nonetheless, I can't get past the decision. And I was so gobsmacked when I saw the replay. To be honest, when I saw it in real time and he goes through on goal and he goes down and Luiz kind of moves across him and you see the red card come out, I assumed he tugged him back.
Yeah,
I was
me
like,
too.
Yeah. I was like, he must have pulled him like he did against Liverpool. And I was like, you know, I sort of was like, bloody David Luiz, he's done exactly that thing he always does. And then you watch the replays back and I sort of thought, I don't know if you had the BT Sport coverage, but I mean, I thought I must have been watching something different to the commentators.
Yeah,
they were like,
yeah.
There he is, he's got to go. I mean, God love Martin Keown. I love Martin Keown, the footballer, but I wish I didn't have to listen to Martin Keown, the pundit, because his commentary and his analysis of it I thought was really lazy and really based on like a stereotype of a player.
Yeah.
And was not related to the incident at all. It was like I literally was going to look at my TV being like, are we all watching the same thing here? It was crazy.
Well, I mean, look, Martin Keown was a man who made tackles and made fouls throughout his entire career, and if he's justifying a red card on the basis that the Wolves player's heel hit Luiz as he was running behind him, I mean, how does that tally with the way that Martin Keown played? And, I'm not saying I've got any issue with that, but it is just this. I agree with you completely that the idea that this was somehow a stone-cold red card, there's no question that, he has to go. There was nobody saying, hang on a minute, this is ridiculous. Even when the fucking Peter Walton's guy was on, the ex-referee, pointing out the absolute absurdity of the situation by saying, well, you know, if he had made a challenge, it would be a yellow card. But because he didn't make a challenge, it's an immediate red card. I mean, that is, you know, if it's the letter of the law is absolutely ridiculous in that sense. But, you know, I have sympathy for Luiz in that microcosm, in that split second. And I think that's kind of what did us in this game was a couple of split seconds where maybe just towards the end of the first half, we lacked a little bit of focus. We didn't stay fully switched on and were punished like unbelievably harshly.
I think it can be a penalty, by the way. I mean, I accept that a tangle of legs in the box, you know, that's the slightest of tangles, the sort of at the very border of the interpretation of what that could be.
But it is the equivalent of a guy kicking. The one that always drove me mad was when a player pushed the ball beyond a goalkeeper, then left his leg out and hung his leg into the goalkeeper. I mean, it is the equivalent of that. Contact.
Robert Pirès did it, didn't he, against Portsmouth?
Wayne Rooney did it all the time. Harry Kane does it all the time. So I don't want to like put this on the one time Robert Pirès did it and became a pariah for it when there are so many English. Michael Owen did it all the time. You know, English players did it the whole time as well. So I'm not here to put it on Pirès, and that's not just because I love Robert Pirès. But you know, it is this weird thing that I don't know how it's become accepted within the game that can be a penalty when, you know, if the goalkeeper takes the legs away from an attacker, absolutely that's a penalty. If an attacker starts falling and then throws his legs into a goalkeeper, it should never be a penalty. And I think in this case, we have an accidental collision in the box. You know, players can accidentally make contact with each other. I think it's very harsh to give a penalty. I think it's extremely harsh to give a red card. And, you know, the consequences of that from an Arsenal perspective were too great. You know, for one lapse in concentration to be to get a goal against you, a penalty, and a red card, you then have to play 10 men. And in some ways, obviously, the fact that we were down to 10 men played its part in the second sending off, because Leno was, he was having to be a bit more proactive in terms of mopping up, you know what I mean?
10th man, effectively. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is. And I'd be fascinated to look at kind of the you know, we've seen some crazy results in the league this season and everyone's saying, oh, it's very open and anybody can beat anybody. I'd love to look at the weight of penalties in that. Do you know what I mean? Like, because it feels like it's now so easy to get a penalty. And in a low scoring game, those moments have huge significance and huge weight. And I do wonder if it's contributing to some of the results that we're seeing.
Well, if only one of us worked for an organization that had a raft of stats guys to make read articles about it, James. You know, just
those guys don't talk to me anymore. They've spent too long looking for central midfielders and stuff. But I mean, the other thing to say about the whole incident is that if he hadn't given a penalty and it had gone to VAR, I don't think VAR could have overturned it. Surely. Do you know what I mean? Which I think shows that, like, on the kind of spectrum of how much of a foul it was, it's not really that far along. And so the punishment does just seem absurdly high. And I don't often feel like this, but I was honestly like, I almost can't watch this at this point because I'm so pissed off.
Yeah, I was really annoyed about it. And like, there was an incident up the other end of the pitch when Saka was... there was like way more contact on Saka in the box for a penalty that wasn't given. And like, I'm not saying that should have been a penalty, but if the bar for awarding a spot kick is as low as what we saw with the David Luiz thing, then, you know, how do you tally those two incidents together? And, you know, for me, when it comes to a penalty, I always try and look at it through the prism of like, okay, how would I feel if that was given against us or if it happened up the other end, right? Mm-hmm. So when we sometimes get a penalty and there's a decision that goes our way, you look at it through the eyes of the opposition. If it happened in our box, would you be pissed off if it was a penalty? I have to say, like, if a similar situation had happened at the other end and a Wolves defender had accidentally or let's say Aubameyang or Lacazette or whoever had kicked the knee of a Wolves defender and gone down in the box and we'd been given a penalty and they'd been given a red card. Like, I'm not going to lie and say I'm going to sit here this morning and complain because, you know, I'm not fucking stupid. At the same time, though, I would still feel the punishment was ridiculously harsh. Ridiculously harsh.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's kind of a loophole in the law, isn't it, that's been... shown up a gap essentially and desperately needs correcting. And I mean, listen, the amount of sendings off we're getting in this team at the moment and the amount of games that are swinging on that, it is kind of extraordinary. I do think you can look at it and say, as we said, you know, the defending wasn't great and the concentration maybe wasn't there and he runs off the back of Luiz too easily. All those things are true. But yeah, the punishment is exceptionally harsh. I mean, do you want to deal with the Leno one any further, really?
Like I said, I think it is because he's having to play as a kind of...
Do you think that is a sending off?
Yeah, no question. No question for me. That's a sending off. He came out, misjudged it, and whatever went on in his head, he just stuck his hand out and, you know, is again a split second of madness, if you like, from a guy who's been like completely uncharacteristic for Leno. Whatever you might say about David Luiz being involved in way too many penalty incidents. And, you know, again, I'm not here to defend Luiz in terms of his history. I think some of his defending has been absolutely ridiculous. You know, but in this instance, I think he was hard done by. For Leno, just a moment where, you know, the ball skidded off the pitch, perhaps, in a way that he wasn't expecting. And, yeah, there's no doubt in my mind that that's a red card. Do you have any alternative viewpoint on that?
Do you know what? You do see yellow cards given for handling outside the area. I guess the difference this one is denial of a goal-scoring opportunity, right?
Yeah.
And that's what makes it red. I always think it's really difficult to know whether a player's going to get onto a ball or not. That's my only sort of caveat to that. That's something you can't really tell. But, yeah, it's a red card probably.
Yeah.
But, I mean,
I can't remember if there was anyone covering.
Yeah, no one covering, really. No.
And it was Traore, wasn't it?
Yeah. So if anyone's going to get it, it's going to be him.
Yeah, I mean, he's as fast as balls, so, you know, there's
I do think it's just a kind of brain melt thing, you know. Everything, he misjudged it and he panicked slightly. And
yeah.
Look, he knew as well straight away.
Yeah, of course. You know, you can't make any excuses for that. I don't think he deserves to be absolutely pilloried for it either. You know, it's just a really uncharacteristic moment from Bernd Leno. Let's just talk very quickly about a couple of things. At halftime, he took Lacazette off, which I thought was... I was okay with that, to be honest. I thought he had a very quiet first half, and I think he was probably not 100% from the weekend in terms of both effort and the collision that he was involved in. I think he'd a very quiet first half. So I had no problem with Pepe staying on. Where I had perhaps a little bit of an issue, and of course you'll never know, and it's just my own personal viewpoint on this, I think getting Aubameyang on when you need to score a goal makes sense. But I would have taken Smith Rowe off and left Pepe on because, you know, we were going to have to sit. We were going to have to, soak up pressure. But our chance of getting something from the game, our chance of, you know, rescuing a point or grabbing a goal was going to come on the counter. And I think Pepe obviously offers you more than that than Smith Rowe does. So I was a little bit disappointed by that substitution.
Yes, I was too. I was disappointed to see Pepe coming off, especially after the first half that he had. I think he always gives you a chance of a goal, especially playing like he is at the moment. That said, I still think with 10 men, Arsenal might have got something out of this game. You know, I really only sort of lost hope when we went down to 9. It's almost impossible at that point.
I know. I was watching on my dodgy box.
Right.
And Andrew Allen just sort of sent me a WhatsApp or a Gmail message, you know, going, oh my God, are you kidding me? And I was going, oh no, what's happened? Because I was about 30 seconds behind. I was going, oh, I had this sinking feeling. I was waiting for something crazy to happen. I wasn't expecting that, you know, from Leno. But I do think you're right. I think, you know, with 10 men, it was certainly possible for us to get something from the game, and I'm not sure that substitute particularly helped. You know, even with 9 men, we had a chance late in the game, didn't we? When Bellerin set up Aubameyang, a shot was blocked, Saka had a shot blocked. So, you know, it wasn't that we made the goalkeeper work or anything like that, but I do think with 10 men and with Pepe to perhaps stretch them on the break, you know, invite Wolves on, sit in a kind of, you know, two banks of four, play a 4-4-1, stick Aubameyang central and look to hit them on the counter. So I'm not sure that particular part of things went well, which brings us to the first half. And I think this is where we need to focus really in that. I thought until it all went wrong, the first half was really, really good.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And I do think, just sort of speaking more generally, I do think Arsenal were very unlucky to lose this game. And I think it's a game of such fine margins. And if you look at the decisions, if you look at the goal Wolves scored, I mean, the chances of that, finding the exact spot it does from that kind of distance, and the chances Arsenal created and the narrow margins by which they weren't taken or scored. Yeah. Wow. I really think Arsenal didn't get the breaks, because I agree with you. I thought the first half was excellent.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I completely understand when people say, and even Mikel Arteta said it, we should have been 3 or 4 nil up. And, you know, you do absolutely have to make the most of your dominance in this league. And what happened at the end of the half shows you just how quickly things can change in a game of football, because we were so on top. Wolves looked absolutely ragged. We were bossing the game. We had the three best players on the pitch in Bukayo Saka, Thomas Partey, and Nicolas Pepe. And I think Granit Xhaka wasn't far behind them. And I think, you know, in the overall game, I think Xhaka had a very solid contribution even in the second half. You know, this was a guy who put a lot into that game, you know, a lot of energy, and he tried to make things happen and press things even in the second half, you know, when it was looking a bit beyond us. So I think he deserves some credit. But, you know, you look at that chance that Saka had in the first minute, unlucky to an extent, but maybe he should be hitting the back of the net there. Brilliant movement from him, though. Brilliant pass from Thomas Partey. Partey absolutely busted in midfield. The quality of his passing, the long passing, I know the ball's over the top, but this ability he has to play this little kind of, you know, this kind of straight line inside pass. When everyone's looking for him, he's going to go wide. And this is what's really interesting to me about Thomas Partey, is that he is like the spike in our horseshoe, if you like, because as a team, we've been kind of predictable in that, okay, we get it, we put it to the wing, we circulate it, we recirculate it, goes to the other side, and we move in this horseshoe. But in Partey, we have a guy who's looking for a forward pass, you know, into feet all the time. When it's on, he can play that pass, and it changes the way that this team plays.
Yeah, it's a bit of a kind of circuit breaker, really. And in Smith Rowe and Saka and Pepe, he's got great targets, you know, people whose movement is really good and who are finding that space. Mm. I agree, he was sort of imperious, really, in that first half. I mean, there was a moment, I think it was actually in the build-up to the second Saka chance, the one where he kind of, where Cedric goes down the left and Saka spins and hits it. It's a good save, I think, because he generates quite a lot of power from that shot, Saka.
Mm.
But I think that move, and I may be wrong, but I think it starts from Partey receiving the ball kind of on the edge of his own penalty box, and he just kind of leans one way and then bursts the other. He sort of dummies and then sprints away from his man and instigates a counter-attack. I mean, you know, that just adds another dimension to what we can do in the middle of the park. And yeah, I agree with you. Xhaka was very, very good. It's not coincidence, though, is it, that he's looking this good, I think, with a partner of that quality. And
no.
Partey is kind of elevating Xhaka by... Yeah.
A rising tide lifting all midfield boats, if you like.
Yeah, I think so. And we saw that with Mohamed Elneny earlier in the season. And we're now seeing it with, I think, a better player in Granit Xhaka looking... You know, even better alongside him.
Yeah, I mean, we've said it before that when you take some of the responsibility off Xhaka and also some of the pressure, because all of a sudden the opposition have got, you know, a different problem to deal with in midfield with Partey, I think it liberates Xhaka a little bit as well. So,
but I agree with you. Look, I mean, Saka doesn't do much wrong on that early chance, or the second one, like where he sort of spins and hits it low, but. They are chances that you would, I guess, hope maybe one of them to find the back of the net.
Yeah, I mean, look, he did find the back of the net with a brilliant shot as well, a brilliant finish with his right foot. And, you know...
It was such a good finish. I assumed it must have been a right-footed player. I only sort of saw it in flashes, and I was like, who's hit that? Because it was just so well taken. And, you know...
Not for the first time. Not for the first time, though, that we see Saka's ability with his right foot, you know?
Yeah,
absolutely. And look, the goal that we scored, a left-footed player playing and scoring with his right foot. I mean, I think what's lost in what Pepe does with the ball to score the goal is the fact that he wins the ball in the first place in midfield, you know. And it's not like he's sort of chased half the length of the pitch, but it's just a good foot in to win the ball, plays it to Lacazette, gets it back, and then, you know, destroys Semedo. You know, maybe he gets a little bit of luck along the way, the ball breaks for him, but, you know, nutmeg, you know, he's rewarded for his endeavor in a big, big way, and the finish is superb. It's a brilliant goal from Pepe.
And the work rate and the defensive intensity really has kind of just come into his game in the last few weeks, and it's making such a difference. And I think it's probably giving the manager a lot more confidence in him, and in turn we're seeing that, you know, develop into confidence for the player. On the point about him being a little bit lucky, I mean, yes, when he goes through for the two nutmegs, you know, the ball takes a nick off the opponent's defender. I actually think that makes the finish all the more impressive, because he goes to put it through with his left foot, and it takes, it comes off, I think it's Bowley, I forget, the second defender, and kind of goes onto his right. Mm. The speed at which he is able to kind of adapt his stride to that and then hit the ball with his weak foot into the far corner, it's really impressive. I mean, it's the reaction time, you know, the technique. It's a fantastic goal. And yeah, I feel for him, because it's not... I feel like there have been a few occasions, I can't remember any specifically, but I have this sort of recurring pattern of him having quite good moments in games that Arsenal have ultimately lost or sort of not got a good result in, and they end up not being remembered particularly well.
Yeah.
And I don't think this will be one, though, because I think he will have to keep his place from here. You know, he's undroppable right now.
Well, that's it. He has to keep his place. And, you know, we just talked a second ago about how quickly things can change within a game. I mean, how quickly things have changed for Nicolas Pepe from a couple of weeks ago when we were openly and understandably questioning what was going to happen with him and how he was going to get into the team. And look, I think he's he's perhaps been a bit unlucky not to play more this season, given the performances of one of the players who's kept him out of the team. But he's really stepped up in the last couple of weeks. And I think, you know, obviously the end product last night was great. But, you know, in the United game, he came close, but one of the things that stood out was the defensive work, the application, the discipline that he showed in his performance, you know, positionally and in terms of what we did when we didn't have the ball. So, you know, this is a guy who has struggled this season, but based on current form, he's got to stay in the team. Absolutely has to stay in the team.
Yeah, and that will be an interesting conversation, kind of figuring out, you know, how Arteta orientates that front four. But, I mean, yeah, it was just a really good first half. I mean, there were good performances all over the pitch. Central midfield, I think, was the standout element. I just was looking at it and thinking, what a difference the midfield makes, you know. We looked like a different team. Bukayo Saka was electric, I thought.
Yeah.
Could have had a hat-trick, as we said. I thought Cedric was pretty good at left-back, like really got forward well combined with Pepe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Look, I think there were a load of positives to take from that first half. And, if I'm Mikel Arteta this morning and I've got to talk to my squad and talk to my team and talk to my players, one, I'm looking at using the sense of injustice that they all feel. And I think that was evident in some of the responses that we saw from the players. We had a question here. Was it a question from the Discord? I think so. It was from Gagan J, who said, do you like seeing our players having a dig at the officials on their social media accounts? I do. I liked it. I liked it. I like the fact that there is this sense of injustice. And if I'm Mikel Arteta, that is something I'm cultivating ahead of the next game. You know, look at that sort of us against them. Look at that siege mentality moment. Look at the stick up for your mates kind of thing and everything else. And, you know, in terms of games that we've lost this season, most of them, you look at them and go, yeah, okay, I see how we lost that. Or, isn't really much you can take from it other than going, well, look at what we did wrong and this is how we're going to have to correct it. I think Arteta should be fueling that sense of injustice over the red card, but also focusing on what we did in that first half, how good we were, how well we played, you know, really hammering home the dominance that we had over a Wolves side and pointing out that it was only this decision and this moment that changed the game in their momentum and changed the way the game was flowing. You know, I feel like he could really make some hay out of this unfortunate defeat, but I think he's really got to focus on the positives and make sure that this doesn't derail us or diminish our confidence, because, you know, the way we played in that first 45 minutes on top of some of the football we've played in the last couple of weeks, that's it. That's what we should be doing. That's what we're capable of. I would be absolutely hammering that home if I were the manager and the coaching staff. Don't let the heads go down. Do not let the heads go down. Don't let them feel sorry for themselves. Get them absolutely fired up.
And I don't think they will. I'm honestly not that worried about the result. It was a crazy set of circumstances, a bizarre game. And that is going to happen in football. And it is going to happen, especially in this league, especially with the officiating that we have at the moment. What you've got to do is maintain the performance levels. And it's kind of a dual job for Arteta of completely compartmentalising the result, but also, as you say, harbouring and fostering almost that sense of injustice and that determination to put it right. And the good news, I guess, is they have an obvious chance to do that against Aston Villa on Saturday in what is should be a good game, and I think a big test. You know, Villa have been okay this season. Wolves came into last night on really poor form, and I think you saw that in the first half. But I really loved a lot of what Arsenal did. And my frustration is with the referees, but I also was just hugely frustrated just to not see more of that performance because I was enjoying it.
Yeah, I mean, I think if we go in 1-0 at halftime, we might be thinking, okay, we should have made more of that first half, but I also think we go on and win that game. I think we go on
For sure.
There's no doubt in my mind. And it's been quite a while since I've had that level of certainty over an Arsenal result or our ability to win a game. Do you know what I mean? A lot of the time this season when we've won games, I've been kind of like, oof, you know, I'm not sure about this, or maybe we can hang on. You know, there've been a couple of exceptions, but in general, the idea that we are superior to the opposition, playing better than them and well capable of winning the game, you know, hasn't been evident in huge swathes of this season. I think it was last night. So... Yeah, so there you
positives
go.
Positives to be drawn, certainly. Yeah. And I guess, you know, I don't know to what extent our Premier League season is kind of already a busted flush, but like I can't get too upset about losing another game. It feels that, like, it doesn't even really matter that much to me.
I'm not sure I'm with you there. I mean, I'm frustrated by the defeat. I'm upset by the loss of points that I think we should have had, because I do think if we'd taken 3 points last night, we're talking about the Premier League season. You know, it's open, and I think it's still open, and I've seen questions about whether or not we should just concentrate on the Europa League, etc., etc. I don't think that's possible. I think we just, you know, without being too overly cliched about it, I think we concentrate on the next game and the next game and the next game. You know, we can't just say, well, because the first part of the Premier League season wasn't great, we can just write it off. I think we've got a responsibility to, you know, to the stature of the club, or what we perceive the stature of the club to be, to finish as high as we possibly can, you know. And I don't know that you can just say, well, let's concentrate on the Europa League and sera sera in terms of the Premier League. That doesn't work for me at all. It really is about building momentum and you know, doing it week on week, game on game. You know, you can't just pick and choose. I get that there might be a level of importance to the Europa League now, but I just don't think you can, you know, you can't view it like that. You can't focus on one thing without it being detrimental to the other thing. In my opinion, anyway.
I agree with that. I don't think you can sack off the Premier League, and that's not my suggestion. I suppose I more mean that, like, the damage to our Premier League campaign was done, like, has been done.
Yeah.
You are always going to have the odd game like this, even when you're playing really well, where circumstances conspire against you and you don't get the result. But I still think we're in so much of a better place than we were that... I kind of look, all defeats hurt, but, like, if you're gonna lose, let it be because of an act of, like, you know, craziness that completely changes the course of a game, rather than it be your performance.
Yeah, it's much easier to deal with when you know you've played well, and it's not a case that tactically, physically, you've been inept or subpar, or you're not creating chances or anything like that. You know, it's much easier to deal with this one and think, okay, we can respond positively because of what we did in that first 45 minutes. What we did, you know, between 45 and 47 minutes, different question. But, you know, overall, I think, you know...
Sorry to cut across. We've had a lot of sendings off this season, and I think there's a bit of a narrative of, like, oh, what would Arsenal's season have been if they hadn't had the sendings off? When the other sendings off happened, we weren't playing this well. Do you know what I mean?
No, like, exactly.
It's not like we were convincing and then we lost a man and it all changed. We were pretty bad, pretty average, and we lost a man and it got worse. You have to look at the performance, and the quality of performance in this recent run has been significantly better, and that doesn't change because we lost at Wolves.
Yeah. Okay, look, we're going to do some questions, so we'll take a quick break and we'll come back with those in part two right after this.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two where we answer questions that you send to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog on the Arsblog Discord chat server, which you get access to if you are an Arsblog member on Patreon. James, I'm going to go first today. Mm-hmm. And from the Discord, we have a couple of questions. First, from Chicken Marmalade Flakes, chicken marmalade sounds slightly delicious to me, but that could be just my state of mind this morning.
I saw a recipe, I think, for chicken marmalade in Nadia Hussein's cookery book.
Ooh, well, there you go. It's a bit like bacon. It's a bit like bacon jam, you know.
Yeah.
And bacony. Anyway,
shouldn't work, but it does.
Yeah. He said, "I saw Urbino's stat about Arsenal's disciplinary record under Arteta, but looking at them individually, they seem to be individual moments of madness. Pepe, Xhaka, Leno, or from players with long-standing disciplinary issues like Luiz and Xhaka. The record suggests a wider issue, but I'm not sure there's much he can do to stop Leno from doing that. Am I wrong?" And also, Kieran E says, "How big a problem is discipline under Arteta? 6 more red cards than anyone else looks awful, but I don't feel it reflects what we're actually seeing from the squad." So, you know, Arsenal have had 9 red cards since Mikel Arteta has taken over, and the next highest is 3. So, how do you view what's going on there?
Yeah, I mean, it makes Arsene Wenger's teams look, you know, very well behaved, doesn't it?
Yeah, but
I think there is a distinction, isn't there, between, say, the Xhaka sending off the other day, it was up against Burnley, or the Nicola Pepe one against Leeds, and something like Leno or Luiz, right? There's a difference there, I think, qualitatively, in terms of the transgression. One is kind of a loss of temper, basically, and the other one is... how can I phrase it? Almost sort of professional foul. You know what I mean? Like it's just a function of having made an error. So I don't know how culpable I sort of make the manager in this. I mean, obviously you can have a conversation with them where you're like, and he said it publicly, "We need to stop getting sent off." But I look at a situation like the Louise one and I think, well, he is trying to not get sent off. Like he's not like he grabbed the guy or hung a foot in or but I suppose when something is so much of a pattern, it's very difficult to ignore, isn't it?
I think it's kind of easy to look at every red card and say, "Whoa, it's a bit tight or it's avoidable." You know, you're right. The Xhaka one against Burnley, stupid. The Pepe one, stupid. The David Luiz ones until yesterday, pretty stupid. You know, and in some ways, like
a
you think about
kind of stupidity, but stupid nonetheless.
The one against Liverpool. I can't remember the bizarre excuse he came out with in the end. You know, it was really weird. But you know, that you think of the one against Chelsea, for example, and what was the
Man City.
What was the catalyst for that one against Chelsea was a bad Mustafi pass, right? So that kind of put him in trouble. So, you know, there are things that you can avoid doing. You know, Aubameyang's red card against Crystal Palace, split second. Nketiah's red card in whatever game that was, you know, that was a bit harsh, I think, as well. Gabrielle, red card against Southampton. I think, you know, pretty harsh, really, even if it was, it was a bit daft. I mean, for two yellow cards for that. So, look, I think there is a pattern, whether it's to do with stupid players, whether it's to do with the way we play the game, whether we've just had a really unfortunate run of bad luck. You know, you can't say that Arsenal are a dirty team. You know, we're not a team that goes out and kicks the crap out of the opposition. So, you know, I think we were talking about this on the one of the Patreon podcasts, that Hector Bellerin is the most booked player in the Premier League. Hatchet man, hard man, tough tackling Hector Bellerin. Come on, give me a break. So I think in some ways, when you start getting a reputation for red cards, it can kind of self-perpetuate, if that's a phrase, if that's English, I don't quite know, but you know what I mean?
And definitely that was a factor in Luiz, as we mentioned. I think, there are a few Arsenal players who have that reputation. I also, if you think about things like the Aubameyang one or the Nketiah one, you know, that's just a consequence of kind of what Arteta demands from his forwards, right? He demands a level of physicality and intensity that maybe those players aren't necessarily skilled at. And so there are clumsy tackles. So there are kind of explanations. And as you say, like some of the Luiz sendings off, they're due to defensive errors, either his or someone else's, or collective. So, yeah, there are kind of like explanations for them all. It has to stop, though, right? I mean, it's we're shooting ourselves in the foot here time after time. And somehow we need to get grip on that. I do hope that kind of... I liked Arteta's post-match comments and that he really backed the players. You know, I think, again, that will help foster that sense of kind of us against the world. Mm. I just hope it doesn't sort of irritate the referees' union, as it were.
Yeah. I mean, look, at the other side of that is you try not to give referees decisions to make, you know, and that you can be in some measure of control of. Obviously not, you know, completely, because the pattern of the game and the way that the opposition plays has an impact on that. But I think Hector Bellerin was right afterwards, where he talked about, you know, teams aren't beating us, which I'm not sure is 100% correct. In fairness, you know, at some points during the season, teams were beating us. We're losing against ourselves, you know, in terms of red cards. That's what he's talking about, and going down, you know, to 10 men. It, you know, it's difficult enough, 11 versus 11 in the Premier League. 10 versus 11, it's really, really difficult. You know, you look at what happened to Southampton last night. I know that was a bizarre, you know, perhaps you would say unprecedented, but it's the second time it's happened to them. Yeah. You know, but it's not normal for a team to lose 9-0 when you go down to 10 men. But, you know, to go down to 9 men, you make life pretty much impossible for yourselves. So, like I said, I think if that game, if we go in at halftime 1-0 up with 11 men, I think we go on to win that game quite comfortably. Ultimately, we have to make sure we don't give referees decisions to make in those situations. You know, as sympathetic as I am to David Luiz over the incident in which he was sent off, just use your experience and just sit and don't let that situation develop the way that it developed. You know, there are certain players who just tend to be involved in incidents like that more than others. And he is one of them. He is one of them.
Agree.
And that's something that Mikel Arteta has to consider now when he picks his team for the rest of the season. You know, there are qualities and positives to Luiz as a footballer, but he's like a minefield.
He's a magnet, isn't he?
He's a minefield because you can walk through, everything is fine, and just one wrong step and your leg's been blown off.
Yeah, you're playing Russian roulette, aren't you, every time you play him, and, you know, you never know when it's going to go off.
Yeah.
This was one of those occasions. But, you know, Gabriel's going to get a chance at the weekend. And if he does well, he might keep the place. We'll see.
Yeah.
You know, that's how it seems to have worked for Arteta. You know, Pablo Mari came in and the place was his until he was unavailable. Then Luiz came in, place was his. So let's see. Now it's Gabriel's turn. Okay, question here actually on the sendings off from Mac Andrews on Twitter, and they say, what do you make of the fact that both our players looked very guilty on the red cards and started walking off before VAR was viewed? We should be circling the ref and demanding VAR. And Xhaka too should have made more of Fernandes' challenge against United.
Yeah, I mean, that stood out to me actually with the Xhaka-Fernandes thing.
Yeah.
You know, where do you draw the line on, like, should your player make the most or make a meal of a situation to draw further attention to it? I don't really have a problem with it in that pretty much everybody else does it. Like, look at what Fernandes did to get Cedric booked. There was barely any contact there, but he made sure that it looked worse than it was. Therefore, Cedric got a yellow card, and all of a sudden the player is, you know, in some way compromised because of that situation. And that's not to... I'm not being critical of Xhaka here because of what he did. You know, some will say, well, that's the way players should behave. But I also think that the onus was on the officiating and the ability of the officials to look at that situation with replays and everything else to make the decision there. As for Luiz, I think he just kind of realized what was going to happen because of who he is and his track record and his history in an Arsenal shirt of doing things which get him sent off. I think he just went, well, there's no fucking way I'm getting away with this one, even if it was accidental. And I think it was. I do think it was accidental. But, you know, if you're David Luiz and that happens to you and you see the referee coming over, you know, what good is pleading your case?
Yeah.
You know? But I do, yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't have any objection if a player did decide to make a bit more of it with the referees.
Yeah, I think so. I think a bit of remonstration can go a long way sometimes.
Okay.
And actually, I'm just watching that referee yesterday. Is it Craig Pawson?
Yeah.
I did feel like there were a lot of decisions where he really... How can I put it? Before he made a decision or before he blew his whistle or whatever, he was actually watching players' reactions, and I felt like he reacted to players on quite a few fouls.
I don't know if you noticed this, but on the video, on the footage, you can hear the Wolves players shouting at the referee, "That's a red card! That's a red card!"
And
then when he gives the red card, they're like, "Yeah," you know. So they're at it. They're at it. You know, so I don't, you know.
I think if you can't beat them, join them.
Yeah, exactly. Certainly. Exactly. You know, there's no fucking trophies at the end of the season for sportsmanship. There's a fair play trophy.
A fair play?
Who gives a fuck? Who cares about the fair play trophy? You know what I mean?
You used to get into Europe for that. Do you remember? You used to get into the Intertoto Cup or something.
Right.
Well, maybe that's what we're playing for. We're not doing very well.
We're top of the charts for red cards and yellow cards and everything else. So we're not winning that anyway. We're not winning that anyway. So, you know, go all out cunt on this thing. So, right. Here is a question from the Gooner Talk at the Gooner Talk TV, who says, should it be a serious consideration that should Matt Ryan not be fit, one of the youth keepers be given the opportunity over Runarsson, obviously for the Aston Villa game? He said, it genuinely doesn't feel hyperbolic to ask that question based on not one, but all of his performances.
Yeah, a lot of questions about this. I like this from Cody O'Brien on Twitter, who said, the Premier League scriptwriters have decided to make us face Emi Martinez with Runarsson in goal. Don't you think that's a bit too much contrived drama, even for them? and James Taylor, just to put the other point across, said, should we really be as worried as some people seem to be about Runarsson? Apart from the Man City blunder, he's been absolutely fine, which is what you want from a backup, surely.
I asked you first, so you go for it. Like, on a scale of 1 to 10, where is your worryometer when it comes to Runarsson being in goal on Saturday?
Oh, 8.
Wow. Is it not working properly? Because mine's about 9.5.
I mean, it was an interesting cameo he made yesterday. Obviously, there was the moment where he kind of Petr Cech style passed it out for a corner kick. That was alarming.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's 9 men. Maybe the exit routes aren't there quite to the same extent. I was fascinated as well that they got him to take that final free kick. It was actually a decent ball. But I was amazed, I have to be honest.
Why?
Because I mean, just think, is a goalkeeper really the best guy to deliver that cross in?
Well, obviously, you know, based on the delivery that he made, he's not bad. And yeah, I think when it's...
Can he take corners then?
When it's, you know, 2-1 and it is basically your last chance to get something from the game, you're going to put all as many eight players in the box, and then you get your goalkeeper to take it. It didn't make any sense to leave the goalkeeper behind. You know, you either send the goalkeeper up into the box or you get the goalkeeper to take it. And, you know, I thought it was a decent delivery. And
he did
make a couple of good saves. He did make a couple of decent saves to him. And it's a high-pressure situation. You know, that's his first appearance since that Man City game, isn't it? And he was bad that day. He's coming on with Arsenal 2-1 down to 9 men. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, I kind of feared that the scoreline might get away from us based on, you know, the fact that we had 9 men and we had a guy in goal whose last appearance was as shaky as it was. So
no, I think he did okay with the exception of that aberration of a pass.
Yeah,
which there are some mitigating circumstances for. I mean, my answer to this question is I'd be doing everything I could to get Matt Ryan out on the field simply because of the Premier League experience.
Mm.
I just think that he was brought in for a reason. Let's hope he can play. I wouldn't, if it's a high pressure situation, I don't think it's right to put one of the young kids in.
No, I don't think so either. I mean, like it or not, Runarsson might well be our best option for the game on Saturday.
If Matt Ryan's not fit, I think that he is.
I think that there's obviously a discussion to be had as to why that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
But if he is essentially our third choice goalkeeper, then, you know.
This is where we are. I mean, Arthur Okonkwo was with the squad yesterday. He was the extra man, I believe. So, you know, I think he would be kind of the next in line. He's been training with the first team recently. But I just think to throw him in at this point, you know, he missed a lot of football last season as well with a health issue. He's 19 years old. I don't think that's viable.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think so either. You know, because you'd be accused of hanging a young goalkeeper out to dry in some ways, you know, by throwing him in that situation. And then what you also do is, whether he's got any real, you know, long-term future with us or not, you render Runarsson irrelevant. Do you know what I mean?
I think there are
layers to it. I'm not saying I'm confident about Runarsson, but, you know, if Ryan doesn't make it, he is our next best option.
Yeah, and look, I mean, he's made some errors already in his time at Arsenal, but he has played 100 first-team games. He has played 7 times for Iceland. I mean, you know, he's a pro. He's the better bet than an untested kid, I think. Famous last words.
Yeah.
And, you know, it'll be important that he plays well because we're not going to score past Emi Martinez. That's absolutely written in the stars, isn't it?
For sure. There's absolutely no way that any Arsenal player is going to be able to score. And, of course, Emi Martinez is going to put in a flawless performance. There's no chance whatsoever of him making any kind of error or being beaten from short range, medium range, or long range, even maybe giving away a penalty.
Being sent off, even.
Being sent off. There's just no chance of any of that
0%.
Zero chance. So, come on, Runarsson, if you're playing, let's have... I know we said this before, right? That in some ways he reminded us a little bit of Alex Manninger.
Yeah.
You know, physically, this is it. This is the moment that Runarsson can become like that Manninger who was crazy effective for about 13 games, however long he was in the team for David Seaman when Seaman was injured that season.
He's going to be super motivated. I mean, listen, as bad as the Man City game was, you know, he'll be desperate to put that right.
Yeah.
I hope he can do it. But if I had a chance of getting Matt Ryan out there... That's what I'd be doing.
Mm.
Let's have another question. I liked this one from Matt C. I'll be interested to hear what you say. Morning, folks. This is on the Discord. Question about something other than the refereeing yesterday. Thank you so much for that, Matt. In honour of Shkodran Mustafi's departure, what are your most memorable moments of his time at Arsenal?
His departure.
It did feel like quite a relief, I have to say.
Mm.
I absolutely loved it when they announced it. I felt like, thank goodness for that. What a disaster.
Look, I mean, I discussed this, I think, on the Patreon. Myself and Andrew Allen did a podcast looking at the business that we did in the January transfer window. So if you're a Patreon member, you can hear that. And we had a little bit of a Mustafi discussion, obviously. You could go through the litany, the roll call of moments that stick out, you know, the sliding tackles, the falling over, the not knowing what was happening, the conceding goals and blaming other people, the Zaha thing, the many issues against Crystal Palace, all of those various moments in his Arsenal career, which I think epitomize his time at the club, you know. But what I think is the most frustrating thing about Mustafi is, like, if a player is absolutely shit all the time, it's like, okay, well, he's just shit all the time.
Yeah.
But when a player can be quite good, but then intersperse the quite goodness with moments of just absolute shitness, for me, that's much more frustrating, because it speaks to concentration and application and things that you should be capable of doing better.
Well, it also sort of has that unfortunate effect of kind of encouraging persistence in them them, because they'll have a decent run. I mean, Mustafi had a couple of pretty good spells in the Arsenal team. When he first arrived, it's obviously one under Arteta, I think, was kind of another. But then there's always something around the corner. Managers kind of get sucked into thinking, oh, maybe he's changed.
If he could just be like this.
If he could just stay this way.
Yeah.
But he will always revert to type. Yeah. The iconic Mustafi moment for me, the one that instantly comes to mind, is the League Cup final one. Maybe it's because it was a cup final, but it's just such a baffling piece of defending that,
Even explain it? How do you explain that a senior professional, an international, I know people call him a World Cup winner, but he played he played in the opening two group games and then didn't play. But, you know, he is a World Cup winner in that sense. You know, he's part of the squad. Mm-hmm. But how do you explain to any young kid watching what he was doing there? Sometimes you can see a defensive mistake and you understand why. Okay, he just gets the wrong side of him. He reads it wrong, or he's turned too easily. You can see. But that was just like, still can't explain that. I suppose the one thing that we should point out, and the one thing that I would like to remember Shkodran Mustafi for, is his contribution to our FA Cup final wins by getting injured in the build-up to both finals in 2017 and 2020. So thank you very much.
Yeah, very grateful. Yeah. Very grateful.
Okay, here's a question from... Oh, it's on the Discord as well. It comes from Simon Thomas King, who for a long time on the Discord I have been reading as Simon the Mask King, which is much more impressive than Simon Thomas King.
I wish he was the Mask King.
You're going to have to change your name, Simon.
Does that mean he manufactures PPE and he's like really lucked out with
I was thinking more along the lines of the sort of V for Vendetta masks or...
Sure,
what was
sure.
that film with Keanu Reeves, and they all wore Ronald Reagan masks? Point Break. Those kind of masks, you know.
Okay.
Those are, but I'm anyway, with you. That's by the by. Anyway, he's not really a mask king at all. He's just a Simon Thomas King. Anyway, he says, morning, gents. Does Aubameyang come back into the team for Villa? If so, who does he displace?
This is the one. This is the tricky one. I mean, I think I've got two options. So one option is to say Lacazette, who has started a lot of games recently. Mm-hmm. He did obviously only play 45 minutes against Wolves, which might make Arteta think I'll persist with him. If he does, I think the other choice actually might be Emile Smith Rowe, and to play Saka more centrally and play Pepe from the right and Aubameyang from the left. They're the two options as far as I can see.
Mm.
I don't think you can drop Saka. I don't think you can drop Pepe.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think I would be inclined to give Lacazette a rest.
Yeah. So. I only say drop Emile Smith Rowe, by the way, because I sort of didn't expect Emile Smith Rowe to play this game.
Mm.
I wonder when he'll get that rest.
I think it'll be Saturday, and I think we'll see Martin Odegaard start on Saturday.
Oh, really?
I know, I kind of had that suspicion for last night's game. It didn't turn out that way, but I think given that he played 90 minutes, 45 minutes or whatever it is with 10 men, 20 minutes with 10 men, 25 minutes with 9 men, physically that's very difficult. Very difficult. And I think we are going to have to rotate a little bit for Saturday and to get some fresh legs in. I know Aubameyang hasn't been training, didn't look fully fit or fully sharp last night, but a few days training under his belt and, let him have a run, I think, in the Lacazette role on Saturday. That's what I would do.
Yeah, I think that would be... That's one to watch, definitely. Mm. I really hope Pepe keeps his place. I'd be really disappointed if he didn't.
Mm.
Cool. This is a question from Adam at Klebs World. Having gone down to 10 men so many times now under Arteta, is it unreasonable to expect more of a game plan in this scenario? Seemed to me at half-time Arteta had already settled for a point in a game which was still winnable.
I don't know that that's necessarily true. I think when you go down to 10 men, you obviously are going to concede possession and territory to the opposition because, you're outnumbered. So you have to stay organized. You have to stay disciplined. I don't think he settled for a point. I wonder how it might have gone had Moutinho not cracked that one in from 30 yards. Mm-hmm. I mean, a brilliant finish. But again, I think we could have closed him down a bit quicker and what have you. And that obviously changes then the dynamic. You're forced to try and come out a bit. I just think it's a really difficult situation. 10 against 11 in the Premier League. I mean, we found it hard enough with 11 against 11 in the Premier League this season. So, I can't sit here and bemoan the fact that on a night when it was 11 against 11 and we were so on top that we found it more difficult with 10 against 11,
Especially because we went to 9 as well. It does become quite difficult to judge it at that point.
Yeah. Okay, let me have a look here. This one comes from Naif on the Discord. I think it's Naif. And he says, good morning, gents. Would it be better for us to play a one-off game against Benfica or is a two-legged tie better? And this is, based on the idea that because of COVID restrictions and what have you, that the Benfica tie might be played at a neutral venue as a one-off game.
Yeah. Is it better or worse for Arsenal? Well, in terms of the fixture list, it's certainly better. I think a two-legged game generally... I mean, I think... how can I put it? It prevents the risk of something like last night happening.
Yeah,
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. You've got a slight safety net.
Yeah, I kind of feel like you're more likely to get a kind of true result over the course of 180 minutes than you have in 90. That's what my instinct tells me. Whether or not that would suit Arsenal is another question. To be honest, I don't really know how good Benfica are, so it's quite difficult for me to say. I would probably favour two legs, actually. What do you think?
I prefer two legs, to be honest. I know from a physical point of view, we might get some benefit from one game if we were to win that game. But if it's a tight 1-0, you can easily turn that around. A 2-1 away from home, you've got an away goal. Those kind of things. I do wonder how it might impact the integrity of the competition, if you want to call it that, if one of the games in this round is decided over one tie or one leg and everyone else gets two.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I mean, that is the competition. I think they should try and maintain that as far as possible. Unfortunately, it looks like we won't be able to play a fixture in Portugal, so that is a problem, but I guess they'll just have to play their home leg at a neutral venue.
I've got one more. Will we do one more quick one?
Yeah, let's do one more.
It comes from the Chief, who's at macho_grande1. He says, what would you do with Guendouzi? And do you think he has a future at Arsenal? Any interest in a party Guendouzi partnership?
Guendouzi. I asked someone recently how good he's been for out in Germany for Hertha Berlin, and I got quite mixed sort of results. He's been okay, but not set the world alight.
He's been Guendouzi then.
He's 21. What's he got left on his contract?
1 year in the summer.
1 year. That's a bit of a shame, isn't it? I mean, I don't think there's a future for him at Arsenal.
Me neither.
I think they will sell him if they can.
Mm-hmm.
I think they have to try and recoup some cash for him. I mean, I know we've used the loan market a lot in January. And
yeah.
Loans, you know, look at the January market generally. No one spent any money.
No.
And maybe the summer will be like that too. That's the kind of awkward thing for Arsenal. You know, even the players who we might have been able to sell ordinarily, we're going to struggle to sell because there just aren't buyers. There just aren't people prepared to pay up big fees. But Guendouzi is, of all the players almost that we have, he's one where you feel like there should be some return on that investment we made.
Yeah, I would. My inclination would be, leaving aside the fact that I think his situation under Arteta is, you know, it is what it is. It's untenable, really. You know, there's a reason why he's out on loan this season. It's not to develop him. It's because they didn't want him around because of what happened at the end of last season. And there were reasons why he was left out of the squad entirely and why he, when we won the FA Cup, posted a picture of himself on Instagram on holiday. You know, fuck that shit. So I think my inclination would be sell Guendouzi for as much as possible and buy a better player.
Yeah, and it's not that I'm not intrigued by the prospect of a parting Guendouzi partnership. I'd love to see it and see what that's like. I just don't think it's going to happen.
I wouldn't be that invested in that partnership either. I just don't really see what Guendouzi is beyond a fairly average midfield player. And we've had too many of those down the years at Arsenal. And like I said, buy someone better.
Mm-hmm.
Partey shows you what you can get.
Yeah, I agree with you on that, for sure.
Okay. All right, look, we have to leave it there for today because of time and everything else. But if you do want to hear the Transfer Window podcast, you can find it on our Patreon, patreon.com/arseblog. We will be previewing the Aston Villa game on Patreon as well. And, of course, we'll have a regular Arsecast for you on Friday. So, as ever, thank you very much indeed for listening. Thanks for being here. And we will catch you on the next one. Fuck Craig Paulson.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.